Good evening and welcome to the Life Coach Radio Network. My name is David Frank Gomes. I am a coach and spiritual mentor. And this is Frank Talk, the radio show about the art and science of a happy, meaningful life. We discuss ways to help you find more joy in daily life with practical tips and strategies. And we also talk to guests who are at the forefront of innovative ways to expand human consciousness and help people create transformation for themselves and the planet. So let's get started. Tonight's subject is something I would say all of us know well. And don't worry, it's all good. We're going to unpack the subject of worry and see if we can understand it a little better. We all do things at times in our lives that create worry. So we all worry at times in our lives, and some of us do it more, some less, and some are chronic worriers, meaning they basically live in a state of constant worry. And you know, perhaps worry gets a bit of a bad rap because we don't know how to use it well. In fact, someone once asked me if worry had any positive attributes, and I thought it was a great question. And as I've thought about it and studied it a bit more, I came to the conclusion that, in fact, it does. It's an adaptive function that allows us to go over things in our minds and come up with solutions. It also prompts people to take precautions, like putting on your seatbelt or buying insurance if you're going on a trip. It also can help people to avoid risky behavior. So now just for a second, we're going to switch gears and we're going to talk about imagination. Now, doesn't that feel like a much nicer word than worry? In fact, we can say that everything that exists on Earth that was not created by God, or if you prefer, nature, was born first in somebody's imagination. If a human created it, it started first in the imagination. So I'm going to make a bold assertion here and say that the human imagination is, in fact, the most powerful force we have to play with. Trouble is, most of us have not really been taught how to play with this incredible power. And so that's something we're going to be looking at. In general, it is, you know, in general, we're more concerned in our society with linear, logical, rational, left brain type thinking. And we've left the imagination to children's stories and kind of, you know, what people think is woo-woo kind of stuff. And that's a shame, because when you leave the imagination to its own devices, most of us appear to be hardwired to use imagination to worry. So worry is a function of imagination. And if you didn't have an imagination, you couldn't really be worried. Thankfully we're not living in this time, but at one time they performed lobotomies, frontal lobotomies, to try and cure some people's emotional troubles by cutting out parts of the brain. So I guess we could try and perform an imaginectomy, you know, like a lobotomy of the imagination, so you couldn't worry. But you wouldn't be able to do much of anything. You wouldn't really be able to enjoy yourself. So rather than try and eradicate imagination or take it out of the equation, we want to learn to work with this energy and harness it to, you know, for lack of a better word, worry in a slightly more productive way. And now I'm just going to lump in worry, anxiety, and stress. In my studies and the work I do, they're all kind of similar, but they have different qualities, and they reflect different parts of our brain, which I'm going to call the hardware of our human computer system. Now, these are all a little different, worry, anxiety, and stress. I'm not going to go into it in great detail, but I'm going to lay it out in a simple fashion. And I think this is important because it helps us to understand in a really simple way what's going on. And awareness is really the engine of transformation. To be self-aware is potentially the greatest tool we have for improving our lives. And this is a fundamental process of all the wisdom traditions. But if we don't know how to use it, it can be like a knife that cuts us and makes us bleed. Or it can be like a handy tool that cuts through the cords of our troubles. And the final thing I'll say about worry is that people tend to use all kinds of strategies to reduce some of these. Some of them are obvious, drinking and drugs. Might revolve around eating or, you know, fill in the blank. There's a million ways we try and deal with it. And now all of these things, you know, at one time or another have their place. So I'm not suggesting that folks won't get benefit from, they really do benefit from the things like what the pharmaceutical industry has to offer. And I'm not suggesting that it's wrong, you know, not to indulge in some of these coping mechanisms. But I'm just suggesting that is a long-term strategy for dealing with worry. It's more of a masking process. And so no matter what you're doing, awareness practice makes everything better anyways. So this is what I believe is probably pretty true for most of us around worry, anxiety, and stress. Worry is really, it equals thoughts. So worry is thinking that uses the imagination to terrify us. It's kind of like a hypnotic loop to drive yourself crazy, often with thinking the same repetitive thoughts over and over. So worry is thoughts, and thinking comes from the thinking part of the brain, the cortex. So worry is a type of kind of this repetitive thinking. So it's like, are you using your brain or being run by it? Meaning, you know, has the machine, the hardware, taken over your life in some kind of, you know, bad horror movie? And repetitive thinking is often about the future or the past. So it's not a very mindful energy, meaning that we're not living anywhere in the vicinity of the present moment with this type of thinking. And it's really, really easy for this to become a habit, which can become very self-destructive. I remember a story my dad told me when I was a kid about an old radio show that was called Jake and the Kid. And Jake would always say to the kid, you know, I've seen a lot of trouble, but most of it never happened. I often encourage clients to make a list of their, you know, top 10 worries and file it away and revisit it in 6 months or a year. And often it's surprising how they report that almost nothing on the list actually happened. So this is kind of interesting too, because it tells us that most things you worry about never happen. So perhaps your brain is linking up worrying with some kind of a reward, because I worried, it didn't happen. There's a funny story about a man who's trying to keep his home safe from tigers. So he walks outside of his home every day, just sort of in a circle around his home with a machete. And he does it for so long that he eventually sort of wears a groove in the ground, and finally one of the neighbors just can't stand it anymore and comes over and says, you know, what are you doing here? And the neighbor says, well, I'm keeping it safe from tigers. And the other neighbor says, but you know, this is the prairies. There are no tigers here. And the neighbor with the machete says, see, I rest my case. So it's kind of this idea that if we worry enough about something, we make it not happen. And I think there's a grain of truth in that. So worry can be both adaptive or destructive. The adaptive function is what makes the advantage for us of going over a problem, you know, until we figure it out. And the destructive version is, you know, spending your life trying to save yourself from a tiger that doesn't live in your neighborhood. And also there's a deeper thing that I notice as a coach is that worrying is a way of distracting us from having an authentic contact with a deep emotional life. And it's harder for us to obtain if we worry a lot because we're avoiding some of this richer material in our lives. And we're avoiding it because we're so busy worrying about inconsequential things that we never quieten our mind and connect to our real essence. You can't do that if your mind is thinking and nattering away at you every second of the day with the same old stories. So it's a good reflection of how often we're afraid of our feelings in our culture. Like somehow we only want the good ones to show up. So rather than touch some of the feelings, the true feelings that we are having as human beings in this human experience, we just keep busy worrying, you know, saves us from having to heal some of those places that if we did would cause us to worry so much less in the long run. So to sum it all up, we need to learn what part of worry is unconscious and what part of it is actually valuable. Now, anxiety is more of a feeling. It tends to come from the limbic system, and that's the emotional part of the brain. So it's an uncomfortable feeling, maybe a fear or apprehension. It might even be dread. You might sort of have this feeling in your gut or in your heart. That's usually where people say it shows up, but you could feel it anywhere. And stress is more of a physical response that your body has, this idea of the fight or flight, you know. So this is what we think was the response designed by nature to protect us from, you know, wild animals. But for most of us, that isn't happening anymore, but we're still accessing it all day long. And this stress response, this physical response can fire for all kinds of reasons, like a bill in the mail or a fight with your partner or looking in the mirror and seeing a wrinkle. And this physical response it happens in ways like blood flow to large muscles, right? Like in case you have to run away from a predator, heightened senses, huge increase in heart rate and blood pressure, big adrenaline spikes and surges, and your blood will clot faster. And this is the reptilian part of your brain. So we have to get to know what the off button is on this hardware, you know. Because some people are living, I mean, imagine if you had a TV that you couldn't turn off, you know, and it was on a 24-hour news cycle. And that's how some people's minds are working. So this is something that mindfulness and quietness practices can really be incredibly effective for. And it's something that I incorporate into my work with clients because, you know, simply it gets results for people. So worry equals thoughts. That's the neocortex, the gray matter. And this is the newest part of the brain. And just in the simplest of terms, this is the labeling machine. It's the thing that thinks and reasons and labels, and we might say it's the youngest and loudest part of the brain. It likes to give things names. Anxiety is feeling. That's your limbic system. And that developed in mammals who have social relationships. And this is the feeling, emotional brain. It doesn't use language. It sees things without language. It doesn't use words. It uses emotional empathy. So it's unable to label anything. And then stress is the physical reptilian brain. This is the oldest part of your brain, the survival center. It's basically kind of crude. It says, can this thing eat me? Or can I eat this thing? Or last but not least, can I mate with this thing? And it acts instantaneously. You know, this is not your wishy-washy type of brain that weighs and measures every little nuance. Like, oh, there's a tiger. Oh, that tiger's pretty. I wonder if he'll eat me. I wonder if I could be friends with him. I wonder if I could domesticate him and take that tiger home. And we could be best friends. And your reptilian brain is not doing that. It's asking very simple, basic questions. And if you can't answer those questions, it's ringing the alarm bells. So these brains are using different types of intelligence, and they're useful in different types of situations. Now, I feel that, you know, in the scientific age, digital age we're in, feeling has it was sort of been relegated to the back room, so to speak, in favor of reason. So the mind has become the master instead of the servant. So we see a very mind or thinking dominated world, which is much different, and it's a very useful form of intelligence. But we often see that feeling gets devalued as in our modern culture we try to literally think our way out of every problem.
And the thinking brain is so dominant in our society for a simple reason, because it's the labeling machine. It's the part of the brain that names things. So it takes control because we live in a world that loves to label everything. And you can see it reflected in many of the systems in our culture, such as education, of how we train professionals. I mean, how much emotional training does the average doctor get? You know, if you've spent time with a medical specialist, you'll often hear people say or complain about, you know, no bedside manner. But why would they? You know, that's the emotional part of our being. And how much training do we actually get in creativity, imagination, empathy, meditation, contemplation? We tend to look at the body as a machine and the brain as a piece of hardware. This emotional piece is often missing in our world. And the feeling part of the brain doesn't use words or labels of any kind. So it's kind of like a secret coding language, and we can use it to diffuse a lot of different types of worry. But we actually have to learn how to use it. So I work co-actively, which means we work with both sides of the equation, feeling and reason, in a balanced way, which is how we begin to build solutions to worry in a more productive way. And then at some point, just worry less. So these different parts of the brain play an important part in worrying. So the cortex sends a message to the limbic system, and that creates an emotional reaction. So your thinking leads to a feeling, and then it sends it to the reptilian brain, which sends a message into your body, which tells you to look out. You know, it gives you a danger, 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 flashing red light type of body experience. Now, these things can work the other way around too. It can start in the reptile brain and work its way up into the thinking brain. But for the most part, for most people, it's actually starting as a thought, which is turning into a feeling, which then becomes something stressful in the body. And all these parts of the brain are very susceptible to a few things. One of them is a chemical reaction. So, you know, that's a large part of what the pharmaceutical companies and business is working on when they're creating solutions chemically. You can also do it through nutrition and nutraceuticals. We can also do it through contemplation and meditation and visualization and tactile imaging systems. Obviously, I don't have time to go into that today, but it points to something really interesting. It's the mind-body connection. And now we know unequivocally that our thoughts affect the very molecules of our body and our emotions. And if you've ever done extensive biofeedback work, and I have, or you have a long-term meditation practice, you know that there's an incredible mind-body connection. And so if we do say that the brain is the hardware and the mind is the software, this is where, in brain science, they call this self-directed neuroplasticity, which in the wisdom traditions they would likely describe as using the mind to overcome the mind. So these parts of your brain are also highly susceptible to thoughts. Your thoughts are like chemical reactions too. So in order to simplify, let's just start to understand how we can find the distinctions between worry that is okay and worry that is less okay. So anxiety, stress, and worry, as we've said, are interactive. They're bidirectional, they go both ways, and all these parts of the brain are chemically sensitive. That's why we try and manipulate them with things like pharmaceuticals or alcohol or drugs or food. But they're also very sensitive to thoughts and visualization and imagination. So this is good news. If people can learn to induce a relaxation response, you can control the mind-body puzzle. So let's look at the simplest terms of this puzzle and how we might put it together. The very first step is simple. You make a list. Good worry, bad worry, and the third column is we're not sure whether it's good or bad yet. Now, good worry anticipates and solves, so it's likely you can do something about this. This falls under the category of things you probably can change. So bad worry or less okay worry is kind of a circular, habitual way of thinking. It's where you use your imagination in a bad way to kind of terrify or scare yourself. And it actually becomes a form of self-hypnosis. And bad worry is things which you cannot change, like anything at all that happened in the past. Although you can learn from it, worry can actually never make it any better. And then the third category is just kind of a question mark. So now this fits in really interestingly with something you may be familiar with, which is the Serenity Prayer. And regardless of whether you are a religious person or not, I consider it to be a lovely statement of truth. And here's a part of it. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardships as the pathway to peace. So that prayer is really about finding more wisdom to know the difference, and this is where we want to start to access more wisdom in our lives, both inwardly in our bodies and in our hearts and in our minds, and then also out in the world. So part of the problem with worrying is that you tend to get into a very well-worn rut of thinking. It creates a groove in your consciousness. And you kind of spiral into this state of feeling and being a little helpless. It's almost like you regress in a way. And so this quiet inner wisdom is something you want to learn to access so you can step out of the dysfunctional way of being and thinking and actually start to turn the volume down on this sort of spiraling chatter that starts to terrify you. So how do you access more wisdom? Well, one obvious one is you talk to people and work with people you think are wise. So working with a coach or a mentor or someone you trust, someone who has knowledge or techniques you could learn from or you'd like to learn from. Another way is to introduce techniques in your life that help you quiet your mind. So you can actually begin to access this power, this wisdom, this voice that is within you. But it's you have to be very quiet to hear it. And that energy is always there and always available to us. And in my coaching, I use a particular process I call inner leader work, which helps us to identify and access some of these voices, these inner leaders, as I call them. It's kind of like having your own root teacher or your own Yoda or Dalai Lama or wise grandmother. And your inner leader is kind of a visionary who is in command and leads all the parts of yourself towards the fullest expression of your purpose. And some of the key attributes are wisdom, having access to greater wisdom, compassion. You know, it's the idea that your inner leader loves you unconditionally, no matter what happens or what you do. Your inner leader, she holds you with tenderness and gentleness and compassion and infinite patience. And certainty and clarity. Your captain believes in you. Your leader believes in you. And courage. Your leader is fearless, relentless in the pursuit of the very best for you. So it's accessing this unshakable dedication to helping you. And so, as I said, worry tends to lead us into this regressive state where we take a step backwards, and it's almost as if we kind of hypnotize ourselves into becoming this powerless person who just doesn't know what to do. And so learning to access this energy of the wise sage, the kind, compassionate, and loving person who wants the best for you. And even if you have no one in your life, or you're not currently working with a coach or a mentor, you can just imagine what it would be like to have someone like that, some of the things I've described. What would it be like to have someone like that in your life? And, you know, what would they say to you in a moment of despair or worry? And I can tell you that this is a remarkable practice. And it actually really works when you practice it and deeply connect with it. I'm only touching on it today, but I have seen in some of the work I've done some really huge shifts for people. And you know, I often work with folks who are going through some very major events in their life, like serious health traumas and other really big things. And I can tell you, when people are going through highly stressful events, they become overwhelmed. They get really raw and emotional inside. And they often, to be honest, feel like a scared child, like we all do, when something really big comes up. And so it's really hard to access the wisdom in times like that when you're feeling that way. So it's good to have a mentor you can go to, or a coach. And it's also great to start practicing and developing what I call these wisdom heart-centered practices, because they're there for you in times of great personal turmoil, which we all face. So here's what I do with clients. I'll often just ask them to make a simple list, as I said, of worries. Things I can change if I want to. Things I can't change even if I wanted to. And things I'm not sure about whether I can change. And to be honest, this is the kind of stuff people rarely do in their lives. It's simple. I call it unpacking. And it's often just the art of writing some of this stuff down and starting to get clear and aware about it. So things you think you can't change really equals getting to a place of acceptance. You can also try and turn it around with an intention or a prayer of what you do want. Whether or not it changes the outcome or not, I can't tell you that. But I can tell you if you set an intention that you'd prefer to have a different outcome. It helps to make you less anxious, because you're putting your energy into what you would like to happen, what you'd like to have happen or experience. And even if you don't believe this, you can always give it a try and see what happens. You know, I can't guarantee that if there's something you can't change, like a loved one who's ill, you can still set an intention or a prayer that you want the best for them, that you want them to heal, that you want it to work itself out. And see if it does change the outcome or the surround or that other person. But I can tell you it will make you less anxious. And I've met many people in my work over the years that convinces me that setting intentions does make a difference. Because we're pointing at what we want to see, not what we don't want. And as the very wise third patriarch of Zen said, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences, when love and hate are both absent. everything becomes clear and undisguised. But when you make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. Interesting. Kind of two sides of the coin there, but it's a lovely idea. You know, if you can go through life inwardly, without preferences, showing up with joy and a quiet wisdom, then everything can become very clear. Now, things you can change, for most people, is often just about moving into action. And so, if you think you can change something and you're not changing it or you're worrying about it, it's probably because there's just some kind of belief system lurking underneath there, maybe deep-seated. Some belief system that you don't have the resources. Obviously, this is an excellent place where coaching really can kickstart that. It's kind of like putting high-octane fuel into the tank. And again, we want to learn to access the emotional and intuitive part of our brain that can help us connect to our inner resources. Now, the third I don't know list, you know, I often see this. It just resolves itself over time as you learn to access your wisdom. So I've just touched base on this today about how your brain works, where worry comes from, and this process of learning to access inner wisdom and to quiet the mind in order to gain more trust with your circumstances and access the inner resources that I believe everyone does have. So I'd like to close with something I wrote a little while ago about Thanksgiving. And it's a holiday that in some way, shape, or form, every culture celebrates. And I wrote about the fact that maybe Thanksgiving isn't a day, but it's the cultivation of a state of mind. And that giving thanks is really the antidote for worry. And the discipline of gratitude, and I believe it is a discipline, and the wonder for this mystery called life is the stuff that brings us into our own creativeness, resourcefulness, and wholeness. It's the summoning of power, the summoning of life within us that helps us to dwell in the wisdom of abundance, where we can work with what life delivers. You know, Viktor Frankl wrote in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, "We who lived in concentration camps can remember the men who walked through the huts, comforting others, giving away their last piece of bread. There may have been few in number," he remembered, "but they offer sufficient proof that everything can be taken away from a person but one thing. It is the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances. To choose one's way." And I've quoted that quote before because it sends shivers through my body when I think about that. And if you haven't read that book, consider reading it. It's really an amazing book. So often we think our lack of well-being, whether physical or mental or spiritual or material, that somehow it has to do with all these obstacles and their corresponding worries that come with them in our lives. That they're somehow all outside of us. They live outside of us. When in fact I offer the obstacles to our well-being are inside of us. In the way we see our lives, we determine the quality of our worrying, if you will. And we decide what is worth worrying about and what isn't. And when we find the earth abundant, and we find the spaciousness of this moment to be enough, and we begin to work with this present moment as a friend and not an enemy, our lives will begin to demonstrate the truth. And that truth will come in greater happiness and meaning for ourselves. And our bodies will feel happier and lighter, and we will discover that we are beginning to worry less. And I think that's a wonderful place to live. So, this is David Frank Gomes. Thank you for listening to my show. If you're interested in working with me or finding out what it's all about, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach me at lifecompasscoaching.ca or on Facebook at Life Compass Coaching. And I will be on again in a couple of weeks on Monday night. So thanks for listening, and good night.